From the Autoline Studios, here is your host, John McElroy.
I want to thank you for joining us on Autoline this week, where the discussion for today's program is going to be all about engines, but not just any engines, the 10 best engines that are out there, as determined by the editorial staff of Ward's Auto. And we've got three of those editors joining us for today's show, including Tom Murphy, Drew Winter, and Bob Gritzinger. And it's great to have all three of you here to discuss this.
Great to be here.
Tom, we've done the show a couple of times in the past, maybe more than just a couple. Bring the audience up to speed for those who may not remember or may not know how you go about selecting what you determine to be the 10 best engines out there.
We only look at the engines that are all new or have been significantly improved.
In the last year, you mean?
Within the last year, for the 16 model year generally. We had one engine that was actually a 17 model, and it took some doing for us to get it in time, but it did make the list. So we look at the 10 returning winners from last year, in addition to any that are all new. So that was 21 of those, so that brings us to our field of 31 vehicles. Price cap of $61,000 base price.
So no exotic engines are going to make the list. No. This is for the general public, primarily.
And we always want to have a bread and butter type engine, something that is affordable that everybody can get. And also we do our testing without any dynos. We drive them the way Americans drive cars, whether it's going to the grocery store, going on a road trip, whatever. So we do that in October and November. We drive them around Detroit.
Drew, what do? You keep notes on these things? I mean, as Tom's saying, you're not instrumenting these engines, but you must have some sort of checklist.
Oh, no, sure. We've got a checklist that we go through that we fill out after every drive. And we do have all of our own little special drives that we do to evaluate certain things, sometimes certain pet peeves. And then, of course, there's an awful lot of bantering and arguing in the hallways as well. So
that's always the best part of any editorial decision, right? The arguing that goes into it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a pet peeve. What's one of yours?
How well it drives in traffic as well. My personal car is a 6-speed manual, and if I get caught in traffic a while, it gets old. So it's one of my things.
How it performs and stop and go and all that kind of thing. And Bob, there's a lot of engines out there, all different kinds. What about hybrids? So what about diesels? What about electrics, pure electrics?
I think Tom would point out it's not just engines anymore. It's propulsion systems. And so, indeed, we do have a number of the new propulsion kind of vehicles on the list, and some that didn't quite make the cut. So
we had three hybrids.
That did make the list. And we'll get into those in a minute.
For the first time ever, we've had two at a time over the past many years. There have been times when two made the list, but never three at one time.
Did the editors pick up on any kind of trends? Is there anything where you all went, ooh, here's something interesting going on? Anything along that way that from an overview that you could point out to us?
We were kind of feeling like this was the year of the hybrids. And I shouldn't just say hybrid generically, because extended range electric vehicle was, and the plug-in. So, the Volt was all new. The Prius was all new. Those two have both made our list in the past. And this year, they made the list without any argument at all. I mean, they just kind of sailed right onto the list. We were all impressed with the efficiency, with the ride quality. I mean, everything was just right with both of those. And then the wild card that we weren't really expecting to just bowl us over was the Hyundai Sonata plug-in hybrid. Mm-hmm. So we have all three food groups represented, the extended range EV, we got the standard hybrid, and then the plug-in hybrid. So that was important to us. And so there's so much innovation in that, in that area right now. And, we're really glad to be able to highlight these three. It wasn't like we looked at each other and said, we want to have three hybrids for the first time. It just happened. I mean, it was just a matter of these are really good. This is kind of the year of the hybrid.
Well, it shows how good they
came in.
And it shows how good they've gotten, how much they've improved. Hybrids have had a fairly rough start with drivability issues and the whole fun-to-drive factor. And these cars are now vastly improved. But, of course, we also still didn't manage to get some really powerful V8s and V6s on the list, too.
Good, and we'll get into that in a minute. And what about diesels? Because there's been so much controversy over Volkswagen with its cheating software on diesel emission standards. Any diesels make the list?
We had one diesel, and it was the Ram 1500, 3-liter EcoDiesel. It was on our list the past couple of years, so now it does a three-peat. There were three diesels in the competition, so the Ram beat out the Titan 5-liter V8.
That's the Nissan Titan using an engine from Cummins.
Yep, right. Cummins turbo diesel. And then at the smaller side, GM with the 4-cylinder 2.8 liter in the Colorado and the Canyon pickups. Yeah. And you know, it was NVH. It all came down to, you know, how quiet and how composed these engines were. You know, as we put them through the duty cycle.
And for those not familiar with the term NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. And yep, boy, diesels yep. tend to bring that along,
they
don't
do.
They?
They do.
Right. Well, and just we should point out, too, there were no, Volkswagen actually gave back a couple of the awards that we...
From years past.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't have any VWs on the list this year.
Well, or at least Audis. They stood up to that and gave the awards back.
Yep. No Audis either.
No Audis either. Let's go down the list here, and I've got it all in front of me, and in no particular order, this inline six, 3-liter from BMW, turbocharged, why'd it make the list? And inline six, I mean, this goes back to almost the very beginnings of the industry when we had inline engines so common. Today, of course, four cylinders are pretty much all inline, but inline six.
Yeah, but this is an all new engine for BMW, and this is part of this modular engine family. They can do a six, a four, a three. They just lop off cylinders, and they've upgraded the turbo, 20% higher boost. They've just added a host of refinement to the engine and special features that improve it. Higher output, 20 more horsepower, BMW makes stellar engines, and this new one is stellar.
Well, and you have to understand, too, an inline configuration is the perfect balance for an engine. The only reason that they're not popular now is because of packaging concerns. Now automakers have to worry about pedestrian protection and aerodynamics, and that's really causing most automakers to phase out the inlines because they can be torn.
Inline sixes.
Yeah, inline sixes, yeah, right. Because they're
but speaking tall. Of NVH, to Bob's point, right. Boy, that's about as smooth as they
yeah.
get.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Tom, your thoughts on that BMW engine?
27 miles per gallon. That's what, I mean, a number of us were, and you don't drive a car like that just kind of leisurely through a neighborhood. You really want to enjoy it, and you make the, you know, the tack needle dance. It loves high RPM. It just revs so smoothly. And so, yeah, inline six. And you know, we like to award clever engineering. So the idea that this is one family that just has, you know, start cutting off cylinders, and now you're putting those engines into minis and into BMW X1, and so it's really cost efficient, and it's great engineering, and they're great engines. We had the other engines in there as well. We had the 3-cylinder in the mini, and we had the 4-cylinder also in the mini John Cooper Works, and that one was very close to making our list.
But still part of that family.
Right. Still part of the family.
Very interesting. Well, let's go down to the next one on the list, a 3.6-liter V6 from Chevrolet, or Chevrolet's using it. It's obviously from GM powertrain. Yeah. But Drew, why'd this one make the list?
Wow. I mean, it was... We haven't driven a V6 this good in a long time.
What vehicles does this engine
This over? Was in the Camaro, and it's also in the Cadillac ATS. Mm-hmm. And those are the two key products we tested it in. And but man, in the Camaro, it's got lots of personality, great exhaust note, 335 horsepower. It's about the most powerful V6 you can get, I think.
Yeah, well,
and that's naturally aspirated.
Naturally aspirated.
Right? No turbo or supercharger on.
Yeah, and it's an all new engine family. So they've had a 3.6-liter DI engine going back almost 10 years, which also made our list a long time ago. And that engine became the workhorse V6, you know, across Cadillac and General Motors and GMC. I mean, every vehicle, it seemed like, you know, the Chevy Traverse, you know, the compact pickup trucks, every vehicle family tend to get, you know, a version of this engine. And now, finally this year, we've got an all completely re-engineered version. that carries over one piece, and that's a little pin. And other than that...
So if you've had a 3.6-liter V6 in the past from General Motors, it's got nothing to do with this engine except for maybe a little pin.
It's all new. Yep. Well, and this thing also performs almost like a V8. If you didn't know better, you'd swear there was a V8 under the hood.
335 horsepower.
The way it sounds in that Camaro is fabulous.
Okay, let's go to another V6 that you've got on the list. And I know this one's been on there forever, and that's the Nissan 3.5-liter V6. Yeah. Drew, why does this keep making the list?
Well, it made it for about 14 years in a row, and then I think the last year was about 2000.
7-year hiatus. Yeah. So from 95 to 2008, it made the list every year.
And one of the problems was everybody was benchmarking that engine, and pretty much the benchmarks, and the benchmark started catching up with the original benchmark, and so it was off the list for all these years. But then it came back, and it's really been smoothed out even more. Fantastic fuel economy, great performance, great mid-range torque. The whole thing is just a really superior package now.
So what you're saying is it's not like the engine got worse.
No.
It's just that everybody else got better, Nissan's gone back to the head of the class.
In terms of this, NVH or the refinement we talk about, it's really setting the bar again.
We've been begging for this engine from Nissan for a while because the VQ, the bones of the VQ date back to 1995. And so there were very incremental improvements over the years for 20 years. And now finally this year, this VQ that we have now on the list is not considered all new. The block carries over, certain parts carry over, but 61% of the content is new. And
that's good enough for you guys.
As new as you can do. And so they save a lot of money and they still keep the port injection. They don't go with the direct injection, but great fuel economy, great power.
Refined.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you have a lot of four cylinders on the list here. What's this 1.5-liter four cylinder? It also says 120 kilowatt drive motor. I got a feeling this is probably the new engine in the Volt.
Chevy Volt.
So tell me about that.
That engine family, they call it the SGA, the small gas engine family, that is going to be producing 3- and 4-cylinder engines, lots of new 3- and 4-cylinder engines, maybe even a 2-cylinder engine in the future, turbocharged and naturally aspirated. We had the turbo version in the Malibu, which is very good and very affordable. But in this case, naturally aspirated with a two-motor drive in the Volt, and we were just so impressed with how smooth and amazing fuel economy numbers. We were able to plug this thing in all the time, basically every day, because we have a charger at our offices. And over the course of about a week, we were running up about 227 miles per gallon because we were, staying
plugging
out of the gasoline mode.
Yeah, but from a consumer's point of view, what you're going to see compared to the previous Volt is it has way more torque, way more power going from 0 to 30 miles an hour. It really makes the car feel sporty and fun.
You're the one who wants to know how it drives in traffic,
exactly.
So it's perfect.
Oh,
for that.
Yeah, and it's a terrific. It's the everything is smoothed out. It's the engine itself is 100 pounds lighter, which is a big deal. The battery is 20 pounds lighter, but also in this the battery range has actually been extended from 38 miles to 53 miles. So really, anybody can do a full commute on only electric power. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun to drive, great electric distance, and then plus you can drive it forever with the extended range feature. So this really, I think this is a game changer in terms of creating an electric car or a plug-in that is going to be attracted to people other than folks interested in EVs.
So we had somebody who took the Volt on a road trip, 227 miles, and still at the end of that, even though most of the trip was on gasoline, 44 miles per gallon, which is pretty darn good.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
I mean, everything that we liked about the original Volt is in this car. And everything that we didn't like is now fixed. It's a great car.
Okay, well, let's keep going. Let's go down to this 1.8-liter four-cylinder with 53-kilowatt drive motor, and I got to believe that's going in the new Prius.
Yeah.
Tell me about this, Bob. What's your reaction?
If you liked, there are people out there who love the Prius. They're just, you know, greenies, big time. And they're going to love this car. Extends the range, mm-hmm. Fuel economy, even when I was hammering it, I think only got down to 47 miles per gallon, a measly 47 miles per gallon.
I wasn't even trying, and I got 61 miles per gallon in it. And what we noticed in a lot of the vehicles this year, and I know this is not entirely new, but the trend seems to really be spreading, and that is a lot of ability to pick your mode for driving. You can be, you know, if you really want to be efficient, then there's the eco button. If you just want standard driving, there's comfort or normal. Then if you want a little boost, hit the power button. And, you know,
you can really pass on a two-lane. You can do whatever you want. And it's just for the engine geeks out there, the engine itself is 40%. The thermal efficiency of the engine is 40%, which is a world best. So that's, you know, maybe the average consumer isn't concerned about that, but engineers, that's really big news.
Well, you see that in the MPG numbers, too.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump down another one, because we're still sticking with the four cylinders. And this is very intriguing to me, from Volvo, going in the XC90, this 2-liter that has both a turbocharger and a supercharger. What do y'all think of that?
You do it, you know, because you want the supercharger to get you off the line, and then, you know, the supercharger is going to basically run out of breath. So then the turbocharger takes over and carries you on into the upper, you know, the upper RPM. We just like the idea that this tiny engine can move a 7-passenger CUV that weighs 4,300 pounds. I'm sorry, more than that. It's heavier than that. I know that.
But closer to 5,000 pounds.
Great efficiency, and really, you never feel underpowered at all.
I mean, it's like it feels like a V8.
Yeah.
This is a tiny little 2-liter engine that feels like a V8. Yeah.
I loaded it up with four adults and all their gear and did a 1,700-mile road trip, posted around 24 miles per gallon, and never wanted for power, whether off the line or passing on the highway. I mean, people have done supercharging and turbocharging, but this hits it. This is perfect.
Don't you think this is going to be a trend that we're going to see more of then?
Absolutely.
Turbos with superchargers.
It's complexity, though. So, yeah.
You can do it at the price point of a Volvo, maybe, but, kind of bread and butter sector, I'm not sure about that. Yeah.
And sticking with 2-liter engines, but now we're going to talk of the Boxer variety, this turbocharged Boxer that's in Subaru. What's new about it? Why did it make the list?
It's actually not new. It carried over from last year. This is one of only two returning winners. One was of course the Ram diesel, and now the WRX with this 2-liter FA Boxer that is turbocharged, that gives us 27, 28 miles per gallon, even though you're thrashing on it. And we feel that Subaru has dealt with a lot of the raspiness of the Boxer engine. For many years, used to feel like a Subaru maybe was a little too gritty or too raspy, but they've dealt with a lot of those NVH issues. Really enjoyable to drive, and, you know, this is a case of a small and powerful engine, 258 horsepower. Powering a smaller vehicle, so it's about packaging. You know, you can make a lot of power. You can make a small car seem really fast, even with a small engine, if you have the proper integration and, you know, the right amount of boost.
It's amazing to me that Subaru still has these Boxer engines, which are, you know, also called pancake engines, because the cylinders lie flat. Porsche is the only other one I'm aware of that has a Boxer engine. Why do you guys suppose that Subaru sticks with this?
Flat, low center of gravity.
Low center of gravity, yeah. And it's also 268 horsepower. I just want to correct that.
Yeah. Okay.
So they've got a durable solution, too. I mean, the engines are durable. The cars are durable. And it's clearly a formula. It's working for them.
You know, the other thing I wonder, too, is it does have a different sound and feel to it, a Boxer engine does. I wonder if that is something that
part of the brand
Subaru,
character.
Brand character. Exactly right. Part of the brand DNA.
It's not hurting their sales. I mean, they have a lot of Boxer engines out there, and they're selling them. Selling them in Legacies, and they're selling them in Outbacks and so forth.
Tom, you had talked about this earlier. We're still on 2-liter four-cylinder engines, this one with a 50-kilowatt motor from Hyundai. You were raving about this.
Sonata plug-in hybrid. I was not prepared to like this one so much, but 27 miles of electric range before gasoline engine is really doing some significant work. And 80 miles per gallon, we were noting at one point. But what's great about this is that this 2-liter direct injection engine is so smooth and really powerful that when you switch, you know, as I talked about, the eco mode and also the power mode, actually when you press that power mode, you actually feel the springs of the seat compress a little bit, like, wow, it's almost like you kick down a gear or something like that. That engine is that good. We're not used to seeing really good engines sometimes paired up with hybrids, but I think this is going to be a coming trend where consistently it's not just about the electric side of it. It's let's really integrate also a great gasoline engine.
Really, really well integrated, great management of the powertrain where you can, it will indicate 30 miles of electric range. Mm. And you drive it 30 miles and you still have 8 miles of electric range because it's done such a great job of regen and keeping that battery fresh.
So regen, of course, being when you get on the brakes, right, you're actually putting juice back into the battery, not right, just using yeah, it.
And actually not even just stepping on the brakes. You take your foot off the gas and you can watch the energy flow. So then the energy is going in the opposite direction. Instead of the energy going to the wheels, now instead of it going from the engine to the wheels, now it's going to the battery, from the wheels back to the batteries.
Powertrain sort of braking. Yeah.
Very interesting. So I mean, bottom line is, you guys are saying hybrids are really starting to hit a point where they'll appeal to the masses, not just, as Bob says, the greenies.
Even though they're not selling, and even though gas is so inexpensive, that's the difficult situation here. This is really a great time for hybrids and even electric vehicles, but the market, I think, is not quite right for it.
Yeah. So when gas goes up, it will eventually, they'll be ready. There's a lot of great fuel-efficient cars out there.
Okay, let's talk about the V8 on the list, the 5.2-liter dual overhead cam from Ford. What's that going, Bob, and why'd you guys like it so much?
Well, what did we have in that?
526 horsepower.
So is this the Mustang GT 350 flat crank?
Yeah,
flat plane crank.
Flat plane crank, great sounds. I believe I said just, turn off the sound system, turn on the symphony of the 5.2 liter V8. Mm-hmm. It sounds beautiful. And the power is there across the range, any gear, it seems like.
And naturally aspirated, no turbos or superchargers or anything.
No tricks, yeah.
It revs to 8,250 RPM.
Hey, I heard this engine's actually made in Germany. Do you guys know, is that right?
No, not at all. No. It's made across the river in
Canada?
Essex, Windsor.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, good.
That's where they do all of the work on the block, as well as the spray-in cast iron cylinder liner, iron cylinder liner. Instead of doing a normal cast iron liner that takes up a lot of space, they're now doing the spray-in process that they used to do in Germany for the Ford GT. Now they brought it in-house at their plant in Windsor, and they do that there, they do the honing, then they ship the block up to Romeo, and the engine is assembled there.
Good. Well, I'm glad. I had been misinformed.
Well, so. you may have confused it with the GT engine
okay,
from the past.
Maybe that was it then. But clearly, I mean, it's so interesting to have this conversation go from hybrids and getting 70 or whatever miles per gallon to this just flat out, essentially, what is a race car engine, right? Yeah, I mean, this is a track engine.
At one point, I think I got 19 out of it.
Yeah.
It's not sure what I was doing, but it was wrong.
Yeah.
To put it into context, now, last year we had the General Motors LT1 6.2-liter V8, naturally aspirated pushrod V8 engine. In the Corvette, past 2 years, it's been on our list, making 460 horsepower. Mm-hmm. So now we go to smaller displacement, 5.2 liter, making 526 horsepower, which, just the idea of achieving that much power in a naturally aspirated engine is pretty remarkable. And when you drive it, it feels, to cycle it up to 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 RPM and to have the engine seem to relish, I mean, absolutely relish the high RPM, it's just amazing to drive.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay, we're getting down towards the end. We got one more engine that we've got to get to here, and that's that 3-liter V6 diesel that Fiat Chrysler is using. Mm-hmm. What'd you drive it in? Why'd it make the list?
Drove it in the Ram 1500. It's a returning engine.
Winner.
Third year, I think.
Three-peat. Yeah.
Three-peat, yep.
And it's all about refinement. You don't really even know that there's a diesel in that pickup until you go out and go to the pump.
And you could easily see this in an Audi SUV or any German luxury car.
They use it in Maserati.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They put it in Maseratis.
Wow. Now, this engine's actually made in Italy, is that
it
right?
Is made in Italy. Yeah. And they had to, because the demand was so high, they had to rejigger some of the plant sequencing, some of the manufacturing bottlenecks, as Bob Lee described them. They had to work that out so they could get more engines shipped here to the U.S. for the truck.
But in very high-tech, compacted graphite iron block and lots of new technology, but really a smooth benchmark strong engine.
Torquey, yeah. 420 pound-feet of torque.
420, yep.
Yeah.
And I want to say, too, I think in the Ram 1500 pickup truck, I want to say 20% of them are
at the take rate. It's not quite that high. It's close. We've been writing a lot about that throughout the year.
Yeah,
it's been cycling higher. But
more diesels than anybody else has sold.
Right, yeah.
Well, for light duty, yeah.
And in that sector, it's the perfect engine. I mean, we had two other diesels that we tested this year, and that was the four-cylinder and also the 5-liter diesel in the Nissan Titan. Clearly, this 3-liter was so much better just because the NVH was ideal, and it still is it's still able to tow a big load, and we just really like that one.
With that, we're going to have to wrap it up. Very interesting discussion about the 10 best
Propulsion systems.
Propulsion systems.
Yeah. That's where we are.
I want to thank you guys.
It's a new day, John.
Coming in here. Tom Murphy, Drew Winter, Bob Gritzinger. Great having you all here talking about Ward's Auto's 10 best. I want to thank all of you for having tuned in as well.